century. Gotta get a microphone for it yet. That was more difficult to get than I thought. Thought I could just walk in and ask somebody at Best Buy or the Apple Store at the Genius Bar. It's not that simple. It's not that simple. They didn't know if we could do this or not. Okay. Hey, we're in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19, we're talking about an exciting subject called divorce. I'm sure you can't wait to get into this. But we're marching through the book of Matthew, and so here it comes. I've been dreading this all week. It's like, what could be more exciting than talking to people about divorce on a Sunday morning in a church service? Especially after a wonderful worship service that we've just had. It's like, oh, let's talk about divorce. All right, so here we are. Matthew 19, verse 1. We're going to read this, and what's happening here is Jesus wrapping up his Galilean ministry. He's leaving Galilee. He's going to head down into Samaria. And if we jump over to the book of Mark, chapter 10, you can read in there about how as he began to go through Samaria, the Samaritan says, we don't want you here. You can't go through. Because again, large crowds are following Jesus. I mean, his ministry has grown to astronomical proportions now. That is why he's such a huge public figure. When he moves in somewhere, it's not just him and the disciples checking into a hotel somewhere. They shut the city down. It's like a national convention. And so he's going to move through Samaria. The Samaritans say, no, we don't want you here. Some of his disciples have gone ahead into Samaria to kind of make arrangements. And he says, we don't want this guy here. So Jesus, instead of going to Samaria, would have crossed the Jordan over to the east side, gone down the Jordan Valley, which is a typical way to travel from Galilee to Jerusalem. Many of the pilgrims that would travel for Passover or the feast would travel that way, would have crossed over, gone down the Jordan Valley into Perea on the east side of the Dead Sea, east side of the Jordan River. That's where John the Baptist, began to baptize. Now this is important, just kind of get this in your mind, because he's leaving Galilee, crossing the Jordan, going down to Perea on the east side of the Jordan River, and from there he's going to have these next few chapters where he's going to be ministering. He's not isolated from the people. It's not like when he went to Caesarea Philippi where he's trying to get away from the crowds. He's walking right into the crowds. Over there is where he's going to then leave, cross the Jordan, go through Jericho into Jerusalem for the final time for the Passion Week. So this is, in a sense, we're in the last month of his ministry. We're wrapping things up. Actually, if you want to say it correctly, we're in the final 6 months of his ministry. Things are coming to a head right here. So he's walking not into Judea, but walking down into Judea on the other side called Perea. And then here in a few chapters, he'll cross over the Jordan, go through Jericho, and take that long hill, long climb up into Jerusalem. We'll talk about that when we get there. Chapter 19, verse 1. Here we go. When Jesus had finished saying these things. Now, what things? Chapter 17 and 18. That is the fourth discourse in the book of Matthew. Remember, there's five discourses. The fifth is coming. Matthew 24, 25. The end times. The eschatological talk that he's going to give on the Mount of Olives. That's coming. You don't want to miss those weeks. But he just finished his fourth discourse. So it says, when after he finished saying these things, he left Galilee and went into the region of Judea to the other side of the Jordan, which would be Perea. Large crowds followed him from Galilee. They left Galilee. They're following him, heading down towards Judea. And he healed them there. So he's going into a heavily populated area that's heavily populated with Jewish people. There's people following him. So he's walking into a large group of people. A large group of people are following him. And of course, they're bringing people for him to heal. Now, it says here, some of the Pharisees are going to go over to Perea. They've already been dogging him up in Galilee. They're going to now go over to Perea to try to trap him. This is, again, a trap. You do what you want with these verses, but I think there is no sincerity in these verses. They are not there asking the great teacher a question so they may be guided into the truth. They're asking the great talk show host a question that's going to cause him to split his audience. They're trying to trap him. There's two thoughts on divorce that are going to be presented here or that are popular in Judea thought right there. One is from a rabbi named Shammai, S-H-A-M-M-A-I. He was the one that would be more conservative. There's a verse we're going to read in Deuteronomy chapter 24 here in just a moment. It's going to talk about separating from your wife because of something that is displeasing or something indecent that she's done. Those words, just like today, they need to be identified. They have to go back to the Hebrew. What did they mean? What did Moses mean when he said these terms, indecent and displeasing? Well, Shammai, his school of thought among the Pharisees was this. As a rabbi, he had taught that has to do with marital unfaithfulness. Some kind of unfaithfulness That would be the indecency. Now you have the right, because Moses is going to say the certificate of divorce. Moses is going to say the certificate of divorce. It's coming up here in the conversation. So one, the question is not going to be, is divorce acceptable or not? That is not the question that they're not asking. They're not asking that question. They're asking, what are the reasons for divorce? We know divorce is okay and approved, commanded. They're going to say commanded. Divorce is commanded by Moses. That's what the Pharisees are going to say. Jesus will correct them. But is it because, as Shammai says, only for marital unfaithfulness? Or Hillel, another guy, he lived from 60 BC to 20 AD. So he was an older man during Jesus' first 20 years of life. He's wrapping up his teaching ministry. Hillel, you know his grandson from the book of Acts. Gamaliel. You know who I'm talking about? That was Saul or Paul's teacher. So that would be his grandson. And so it would be Hillel, the grandfather, taught this. Displeasing means just what it sounds like, men. It means if you are displeased. I mean, we're talking burnt eggs. We're talking messy house. We're talking she's not as pretty as she used to be. Boom. There's a certificate of divorce. Moses said it. That was then Hillel. He was more on the liberal side of interpreting it. So now we're just talking about the Pharisees. So the Pharisees were the teachers of the Jews in many cases. They followed these are the two schools of thought among the Jews. And the Pharisees would have to side with one or the other. Shammai, if the wife is unfaithful, divorce is available. In fact, was expected at this time in history. If a woman was unfaithful, it's almost mandatory you divorce the woman. Over all the way to Hillel's side was if you are displeased with the wife. Good enough. All you need to do is follow the correct channels, and that is write the correct certificate, have it delivered the proper way, and have it witnessed. It's official. Now, that was the trap they're bringing Jesus into. They're telling Jesus, well, let's read the text. Here's me talking. Verse 3, chapter 19 of verse 3. Some Pharisees came to him to test him. Now, remember, there's large crowds. Jesus has a huge following. He's healing people. The Pharisees don't come and say, this is really nice that you're doing this for the people, healing all these people. What a great service for the community. We appreciate the help. Instead, they say, we've got to stop this guy. He's more popular than we are. We've got to split his poll numbers. Some Pharisees came to test him. They asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Now again, it'd be nice if that was the period right there. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Yes or no? But that's not the question. The question is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Who do you side with, Jesus? Shammai or Hillel? Just for marital unfaithfulness or for burning the eggs? Which one? Now, Jesus' next answer is going to split his crowd. Do you understand? If you've got think of any political issue, think of any kind of that there's A side, B side, and you've got a public figure, just grab Billy Graham. Okay, Billy Graham. And then there's got to be others too, but my mind is old, so I can't remember it either. So here's Billy Graham. Billy Graham, are you for the Democrats or the Republicans? Now, when Billy Graham answers that question, he's got both listening to his programs. He's got both following his ministry. He's got both that are contributing to his ministry. When he says Republicans or Democrats, he splits his audience and now he's hurting himself. So what they're doing, they're trying to get Jesus. This is a trap. This is a test to trap Jesus. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Now, Jesus is going to take a step here. I should go back and read Deuteronomy so we know what we're talking about. Jesus is going to take a step right here, and he's going to go to what we would say the original source. It was a style of debating in the rabbinic world, even yet today, is the most original source has the most weight in a debate. And they are quoting, they're referring to Moses. But Jesus, as you see right here, haven't you read that at the beginning the Creator, then he quotes, made them male and female. He goes past Moses' certificate of divorce and goes back to the beginning. So in other words, he doesn't say, well, I kind of lean towards the left or I kind of lean towards the right. He says, haven't you heard? In other words, he's going to end up saying, neither one of you got it figured out because you've now tried to make it an institution of men to get what you want. Haven't you read at the beginning? The original purpose was this. And he's going to go back to the Creator and how he began. But let's go first of all to Deuteronomy 24. I just want you to at least see the text. I'll show you two texts here. and then we'll go to Genesis. Deuteronomy 24. Again, it's not a thrilling, exciting verse here. It's just Moses giving an example or trying to help the situation. Let me see if I can explain this a little bit. In Moses' day, before the law of Moses came about, men in this culture at this time could just get rid of their wife. It's like, I'm mad, leave, you got to go away, and marry somebody else. Now again, that there was no paperwork, there was no legal document, there was no court record. It was just, she's gone, and he's got a new wife. Now that was a very huge problem for women who in this culture would have to rely on a husband for many, many things, including their retirement and their life, you know, their provisions for the rest of their life. With a woman being sent away, she was in a sense condemned to a life of poverty. But if another man, per se, in this culture before Moses, said, well, I'd like to marry this woman, the former husband, since there's no paperwork, there's no legal trail, could say, wait, that's my wife. You can't marry her. But she couldn't come home. So this woman was left destitute. This certificate of divorce that we're going to see here would have to have included, and it's written in documents, would have had to include, behold, you are free to marry any man. And that would be a certificate of divorce. Again, understand where we're heading with this. The idea here is not that this is a great opportunity so that when you get married, here are all the loopholes to get out. The ideal is divorce is not part of the plan. But there is, in this situation, certain regulations. We're going to get into this more. But here it is. This is Moses, chapter 24, verse 1. If a man marries a woman who becomes, here is your phrase, displeasing to him. Again, you can see why that's got a lot of directions you could go with that. Because he finds something, now this is going to describe displeasing, something indecent about her. Again, Shammai said the indecent was marital unfaithfulness, which would cause the husband to be displeased. Hillel's crowd kind of just hung on that word displeased. I'm displeased. I'm displeased. A messy house is indecent, for example. And he writes her a certificate of divorce. And then that's the phrase, a certificate of divorce. Gives it to her and sends her from his house. And if after she leaves his house, she becomes the wife of another man, which means she can legally get married again. And her second husband dislikes her and writes her a certificate of divorce. Gives it to her and sends her away from his house. Now Moses now is getting into a situation. Then she goes back to her first husband and says, no, you can't go back to your first husband. That's really not what we're looking at right here, the rest of that text. The rest of the text right there is that they're building on the fact that she could get a certificate of divorce and be sent away. With that certificate of divorce, she was officially, just like she was at one point legally married, she is now legally divorced and free to marry another man who can now take care of her. Now the situation here, you say, well, now he divorced her, and now this one's running around trying, where do I go now? That's not what we're looking at. Go back to chapter 22, verse 22. Chapter 22, verse 22. This helps explain, possibly, the Hillel-Shammai debate right here, because or at least add fuel to the fire, because if the concept of, and again, I'm probably boring you here with needless information, but nonetheless, that's my style of teaching. Just bore the crowd to sleep, and they think it must have been pretty good, we went to sleep, is when it says indecent or displeasing. What does that refer to? Well, look at chapter 22 of Deuteronomy. If a man is found sleeping with another man's wife, both the man who slept with her and the woman must die. You must purge the evil from Israel. So in other words, that kind of says, well, if it is just about being unfaithful, she would be stoned to death along with the man. So really, indecent displeasing would mean much more than being unfaithful, because you're getting stoned to death for being unfaithful. It must refer to burning supper. Okay, that's what they would have said. Okay, let's go back to Matthew 19. We're going to go back to Genesis in just a second. Matthew 19. Matthew 19, verse 3. Some Pharisees came to him to test him. They asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Jesus says in verse 4 of Matthew 19, haven't you read? He's going to go to the weightier verse than Deuteronomy 24. He's going to go to the original source of Genesis. That at the beginning,
The Creator made them male and female and says, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. Again, this is a huge verse loaded with all kinds of information. We've got to break this down a little bit. At the beginning, the Creator made them male and female. This verse is saying, at the beginning, I mean, there's nothing on the board. There's no plans. There's no direction. There's nothing been revealed yet. At the beginning, the Creator could have done whatever He wanted to. He could have made them all male. He could have made them all female. He could have made, you know, three or four different types of sexes. He could have done a variety of things. It's an open slate. He is the Creator. But in the beginning, the Creator, this is a huge concept right now, is this not? In the beginning, the Creator chose to make one and two, male and female. Solves that question, doesn't it? We don't need to go much further with that. It's like, well, what about the third compartment? Or they don't exist. That's not part of the plan. It's like, do you understand right there? It's like, well, we could go on, but we're talking about marriage right here. The Creator made them male and female now and says, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. There are certain institutions God has created. There are certain things God has just put in motion, like gravity. You know, you're born male or you're born female. Certain things that are just going to happen. But within those institutions, for example, is marriage, where you can choose. There's some, you're going to form this union. In our country, you fall in love, you date for a while, you fall in love, you get engaged, you set a date, you invite everybody, and you have a big ceremony with a dance and eat some food, and then you go on a honeymoon, and now you're married. That's how we do it. Different cultures do it different ways. Sometimes they make agreements. Mom and dad get together, or husband or a family gets together, and we make an agreement with someone else who's got a 2-year-old daughter and our 2-year-old son. They make a deal, and in 20 years they're going to get married. We sign the contract, and the boy and girl grow up, and one day we introduce them, you're going to get married to this person tomorrow. And they get married, and it's like, hope you fall in love. And that's life. You know, that's the way they do it, okay? But the idea here is that marriage is an institution created by God, but what's unique is man has some input in it. Marriage exists. Now, if you want to enter into this, you are stepping into something God has instituted, not man. Man did not come up with the idea of marriage. You can imagine what kind of things man would have come up with. Well, you don't need to imagine. Just watch TV. Just listen to the news. This is how man would define marriage. God created the institution of marriage and says it works like this. A man from this family and a woman from this family will leave those unions. In other words, he's saying these unions exist. You're a part of this family, but you're going to now join a more prominent, a more important, one that has precedence over those others. You're going to leave your family, and you're going to be united to your wife. You've now formed a union. You make the choice, but once you enter that, you're in the institution of marriage. It's not designed by man. It's designed by God. If man designed it, it would be, well, we'll kind of live together for a few years. We'll shack up. We'll see how things work out. We'll do it this way. Maybe if things happen, we'll maybe have some kids or something. But we don't want to make any real commitment because we may change our mind. That's how man would have designed. They would have left their families. They wouldn't have left anything. Their kids would be more, I just want to get married and have kids. And when I have kids, I'll leave with my kids. You can go off and start another family. There's all kinds of ways that man would describe it. God says you'll leave this family, you'll be united, and you've now stepped into this institution called marriage. God's saying, I created that institution. This is how it works. That's what is being said right here. Verse 4, haven't you read that at the beginning the Creator, in His own idea, made them male and female? That was His plan. And said to those male and female, for this reason a man will leave his father. Again, you have a family relationship with the father. You also have a relationship with children. But there's something more important than any of those relationships, and that is this marriage union. That would revolutionize so many things in our culture. If we would understand, if we'd embrace marriage as the most important institution. Yes, you've got your family, you've got your children, but the primary source, the primary relationship is this marriage relationship. Now, the disciples, if we jump down into verse 10, if you say, well, I don't know, that's kind of extreme. Look at the disciples. The disciples said, if this is the situation between a husband and a wife, it is better not to marry. I mean, the disciples are hearing this. And they're Jesus' followers. They've been healing. They're doing their own ministry thing. And now they get asked this question. And they're like, yeah, Jesus, how do we feel on this? What is our political stance on this? You know, Shammai or Hillel? And Jesus is going to say, well, you know, it's a little more complicated than that. Or it's a little simpler than that. You get married and you stay married because this is the institution you got. And the disciples are like, whoa, you mean so neither one of them's right? How can anyone get married? How will this even work? The disciples, the founders of the church, the ones who wrote the scripture upon which the church is built on, they are saying, boy, this won't even work. This won't even work in society. People tell me, your description and your views are so old-fashioned, they will not work in our culture. That's exactly what the disciples are saying. They hear Jesus go, this will never work. This will never work. We can't do this. Who can live this way? Because although they may have been faithful to their wives, they may have been pleased with their wives, they may not have had any intention of divorcing their wives, in their mind, when they entered into that marriage, Peter and James or John, whoever, I'm not sure how, I know Peter was married, and I know James was married. But I know they were married, it says in the Bible. But they were married. That maybe in their minds they knew that, you know, if things don't work out, there's always the option, I can leave my wife. It's like they realize now for the first time, no, you can't. This is what God intended. You stay married. This is more important than your family. This is more important than your kids. Your marriage cannot be broken. It's like, oh, this is difficult. So even the disciples were struggling on this. So don't look at me and say, well, you know, that's kind of extreme. Yes, we're talking about the Creator and His original plan. How far have we deviated? I was thinking about this before I started, sent back there today. It has nothing to do with anything what we're talking about, except this. Is we get the impression that in the Bible days, they always had the Bible. And in the Bible, and remember, when you say Bible days, if you go back to Moses, that's 1400 BC, all the way up until, let's say, 70 AD. You've got 2,000 years of history where my impression, just on a general impression, well, back then they had the Bible and God was doing all these things. But realize, throughout that time period, many, many times, the people got so far from the truth. The book of Judges, the book of 1 Samuel, it even says in those books that there was not, the Word of God was not available. They did not have the Word of God. It was written, but they set it aside, and they drifted as a culture. The times of day say, well, David did such and so, and David was this way, and what about Solomon? Remember, when David took the Ark of the Covenant to carry it into Jerusalem, or began to carry it, they carried it the wrong way. They carried it like the Philistines. It's written right here how to carry the Ark of the Covenant. Details on how to deal with the Ark of the Covenant. And David did not know. And he wasn't trying to be disobedient. He was just doing what he thought was best. He really felt in his heart, this is what we should do. We'll do it just like the Philistines. That was neat. They had two cows. They had a cart. Had a little ark sitting on there. It was really cool. We'll play some trumpets and we'll bring it on home. Come on, let's go. And all of a sudden it rocks a little bit. The priest reaches out. Oh, it's going to fall. Stop. Touches it. Boom. Everybody dies. He dies like, oh man. Why did God kill him? It said, we're doing the best we can. And someone came to him and told him, you're not doing it the right way. He said, well, how do we know? Well, it's written right here. Where'd you get this from? What is this? And David had to read the account that Moses wrote on how to carry the ark. And then the next time, he does it the correct way. So understand, there's been huge periods of time in history with God's people where they didn't know what they were supposed to do. And so they're making things up. And here's a classic example on marriage. It's like the rabbis are teaching and they're making stuff up and the people are following the religious teaching, but here comes the Creator himself and says, you're so far, you don't even understand the question. You don't even understand what the institution of marriage. Well, we've got this, what got this question, is it A or B? He says it's neither. You're so far off base, you don't even have the correct beginning. And I don't wonder, that's where we are at today as a culture. We have Christianity. We have religion. We have ideas. We've got concepts. We've got